Hello there, it's me, Duncan, and this is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. If you're listening to this, I'm in Los Angeles right now. Beautiful Los Angeles. We're going to scope it out, considering making the big move. Though we keep wavering, going back and forth, there's so much involved in moving these days. I mean, holy shit. It's weird, in the Book of Revelations, they never mention how many preschools you have to do interviews for if you want to move to Los Angeles during the apocalypse. We don't know what it's like there right now. I've been getting a real mixed message from people who are there, ranging from it's insufferable to it's fine. We're going to find out. Anyway, because I'm traveling now, I don't have time to do one of my long, award-winning, beautiful, powerful, musical, almost Broadway-level intros. So, we're just going to jump right into this episode with my friend, Marcus Henderson. Now, before we get going, I would like to invite you to sign up for my Patreon. Once you do that, you will no longer be plagued by commercials. You'll just get straight DTFH injected right into your pineal gland. Also, you're going to get extra content. We meet twice a week for our Journey into Boredom, our meditation, and of course, our legendary Friday family gatherings. We're a tribe, a commune, a vibratory field of consciousness calling you to come home. Come home to your family. Now, everybody, with us here today is a brilliant actor. You probably know him from Get Out or Tacoma FD. He's one of the most incredible things that came to me from the Midnight Gospel, because he and his friend Brandon reached out to me and said, what do you say we just, like, we be friends? It was the coolest thing ever. Then we started doing like a weekly philosophy club where we just get together and talk. It was super fun. And actually, one of the bummers about leaving LA is Aaron and I just started hanging out with Marcus and Brandon and his family, and then we split, so it really blew. But what doesn't blow is that Marcus is with us here today for a frank, smart, intense conversation about acting and what happens after you co-star in a movie like Get Out. Everybody, please welcome back to the DTFH, Marcus Henderson. Marcus, welcome back. How you doing? It's great to see you.
Feeling great, man. This is so good to be back here with the family again.
I miss you. I miss your family. I miss LA. It's great to see you.
They just come back, man. We just come back already.
It's looking like it's gonna happen. It's like we miss it so much. It's killing us. We watched the game last night and we're like,
yeah.
Just thinking, oh man, if we lived there, maybe we could have been there with the kids, watching their minds get blown by that. Man, did you watch it last night?
I watched every game, dude.
Oh my God, what a fucking game.
I know.
Oh God, it was ecstasy.
The thing is that I really wanted Garoppolo to win so that he could fuck it up in the Super Bowl. That's really what I was looking forward to, because I for fantasy football this year, I pretty much used Cincinnati's whole starting lineup.
Okay, wait, I'm sorry. Let me tell you this. Before we get going in sports talk, I know shit about sports. Aaron likes sports more than I do, and I almost started doing the thing I'm trained to do, a fake, like, Garoppolo. Yeah, of course. Me too. I wanted that. Garoppolo, oh my God.
Yeah.
He's such a great
comic. I told somebody yesterday, just say number 10. Just always when you're talking about sports, just say something about number 10. Number 10 on that squad is like fucking terrible.
But I have to say, when Aaron wanted to watch the game, and I was being a real fucking dick about it, like, I don't like football. But then, like, at 30 minutes in, I'm just like, holy fucking shit, you're at the edge of your seat. Because like,
they know how to build the narrative. The story is built so well.
Yeah.
It's built so well. And this is a testimony to any human being who watches sports or doesn't watch sports, but catches like the World Series at the bottom of the ninth with two outs.
Yeah.
Down by one, bases loaded. Yeah. You know, like that's made for TV.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's everything. It's everything.
Those are miracles.
Yes. And it's just, it's like sad. Like, you know, at the end of the game, like no matter what, some, like a group of people's hearts are going to be fucking broken. So right. You have to, that's like, there's this brutality to it, man.
Did you see the Dallas game?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So after Dallas lost, these people lost their fucking minds, man. Like lost their minds. I mean, I saw videos of people crying and breaking down. Like, did you bet your whole house?
Yeah.
On the game?
Yeah. It's deep, man. It's deep. It's deeper than almost anything. I mean, it's one of the deepest things in popular culture. I don't think people realize how and it's very sticky. You get caught up in it. And it's so, there's so much weird, like, I don't know, just deep metaphysical shit going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the chanting of the crowd, exactly. And the energy, exactly. It's a ritual or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
And in basketball, there's been a lot of crowd control in terms of like censoring what the crowd says to the players, because players have gotten a lot more sensitive to what's being said to them while they're playing the game, which is, I mean, it's no excuse to call somebody, you know, bitch ass motherfucker while they playing the basketball game. Like that's right. Just, it's no, why you want to do that?
Right.
You
know? That's curious. That like when you, if you think it's just the teams, it's totally not. Like there is some participation happening via massive amounts of energy being poured into either group. It's like everyone's weirdly involved in it somehow.
Yeah,
not
man,
just the players.
There's this amazing documentary. Well, it's not amazing. It's just like a documentary. I was about to say amazing, but it's called the Malice in the Palace from when like 2004, 2005 or something like that, when Indiana played Detroit in Detroit, and they got in that huge brawl with the crowd and like Jermaine O'Neal, Artest, all these guys, like. It's like, man, like, this is crazy, you know, like like we don't want to see that happen again, obviously.
Right. Yeah. Surprised it doesn't happen all the fucking time. I'm surprised it doesn't happen like one out of three games. It just descends into some melee of just the whole
madness,
just everyone attacking everyone else. But the people manage to stay restrained. Dude, I want to talk to you about something. Yeah. Because I know a few actors. And it's something that I'm interested in because I love watching movies and I love, you know, I was a theater nerd. I find it to be one of the most psychedelic art forms. But so I was watching Macbeth. There's a new Macbeth out. Have you seen it yet?
I have seen it.
It's so fucking good and so fucking creepy. And I just want to talk to you. I want to start off talking to you a little bit because you're one of the only Shakespearean actors
that
I know. And I want to talk about that a few different points. The first being when you are playing a role, a Shakespearean role, how much of what you're saying do you fucking understand? You know?
Yeah, because it doesn't sound like a person. You like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Yeah, it's so weird and trippy and like yet somehow relatable, but you don't know. Like it's saying things like, you know, thrice a field mouse come this way and then a drop upon the piper's pipe. We saw it. But they're saying it with like this passion where you're like, holy fuck.
Yeah,
how much of that did you like actually deeply understand as an actor, and how much of it are you just sort of doing the cadence of it?
So I think that there are two things that happen in the process that sort of intertwine with each other. Number one, you are learning the cadence because it is a musical language. Right. It is something that goes da 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 ba 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 ba. You know, that iambic pentameter. But the other thing that's happening is you're breaking down your text. Like every word means something. It's so skillfully placed, you know, in the monologues, in the dialogue, like everything is said for a reason. Like when you get these couplets, like there's a world of things that you're able to do with language. And I think that, you know, Shakespeare, just like universally, you can get a lot of things out of that, you know.
Yeah.
No matter what your background is, like you can definitely relate to Shakespeare and understand these characters in a way to where the language is just going to do, it's just going to do it itself. Like, it's just like if you're reciting a song or something like that, like you may not know what every word means, right, but you can feel the passion of the yeah. artist that you're mimicking, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
My son is Malachi's into Kanye West, Can't Tell Me Nothing. You remember that song?
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait till I get my money right. And what does my 5-year-old son know about that?
Yeah.
Not a goddamn thing. But he loves that song. And like, he wants to hear it every day on the ride to school, on the ride home. And he doesn't know what those words mean, but he feels it.
Yes.
So I think what happens in Shakespeare is that even as the viewer, as the audience, we may not understand what is being said, but the passion from the actor who has done his research, who has been put in that place to be the author of these words on stage, you immediately get that opportunity to make somebody feel something. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So yeah, that's what I think Shakespeare is. And it intertwines the language with the musicality of the language with the meaning of the words.
Huh. It to me, it feels like it would be dangerous to play some of those parts. But seriously, not to be like overly dramatic or like whatever, but I, like, just sitting in like by myself in my living room,
yeah,
watching it, and as the darkness of that fucking play starts like creeping in to your life, and you're yeah. like beginning to understand that you've been lured into some awful trap, like it's terrible. And then I mean, and of course, you know, I was obviously like super stoned, but I was like, this is like as horrible as any horror movie I've ever seen, as
yeah.
dreadful as any fucking thing I've ever seen. So acting that out, do you feel like I'm getting sick from this? By the way, I don't know which plays you've actually acted in. Which?
Well, I was just about to say, at Alabama State, we did Othello. I had the opportunity to do Othello twice, actually. And I did it the first time, and it was like my first like play that I got to do a lead in. And,
Jesus.
You know, and I felt like, you know, and what was really interesting about the experience is that Alabama State is an all-Black school. And, you know, Othello is a Black man in an all-white world. So how do you pull off a play like this in the setting that you're in?
Yeah.
And basically, you know, no color, race, culture is beyond jealousy, is beyond love, is right. beyond rage, is beyond war, is beyond friendship, you know, infidelity. It all lives in that play. And so being able to do it, it just really, you know, talking about living with it, man, I did it the first time and it was just like, oh man, just get all these words out of the way and
right,
just
right.
speak all these words as fast as you can. And then, you know, it'll all be over with.
Yeah.
The second time I did it, I had a much more calm demeanor about, you know, what I was doing. I understood the words, the musicality of it was coming together. And I definitely just had like a better understanding of that world. Now, I was 20 years old.
Yeah.
playing the role, but like it still resonated with me.
Sure.
I imagine it would probably get deeper and darker the older I get, because right. my understanding of the world is a little different now.
Right.
You know, yeah. as in any play or anything you do where you're younger and there are older characters, you yeah. know, you get older and you're like, you know, I play Walter Lee in The Raisin in the Sun, and he has a son and a wife, and he's living with his mom, and he just wants to, like, get from under. Yeah. He just wants to finally get a leg up. He takes that money and he, like, you know, he's going to do something with it. He's going to give the money to Willie. And Willie's going to make his dreams come true.
Yeah.
And now, as a 36-year-old man, I'm like, man, how many times have I given Willie my money because I thought I could get a leg up in this world?
Wow.
And how many times have I looked at my kids in the last, you know, 10 years and said to them, I promise you, I'm gonna make you give you a better life than I had.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I understand those words so much deeper now.
Yeah.
Than I did when I was 25, 26 years old playing those roles.
Right. Thank you, ButcherBox, not just for supporting this episode of the DTFH, but for sending me a box of delicious, healthy meat. I gotta tell you, these days there's something incredibly comforting about having a bunch of meat in your freezer, especially knowing that that meat isn't some kind of meaty sponge filled with antibiotics and hormones. We had a delicious taco night thanks to ButcherBox's high-grade ground beef. It's wonderful. It's as close as I've ever come to hunting, actually, because my podcast got the meat sent to me. So, I mean, something. Regardless, this is delicious meat. Each box contains between 8 to 14 pounds of meat, depending on the box you choose. It's packed fresh, shipped frozen for your convenience. You can customize your own box or go with one of theirs. Either way, you get exactly what you want. This is your chance to never have to shop for ground beef again. That's right. ButcherBox is giving new members free ground beef for life. Sign up at butcherbox.com/Duncan and get 2 pounds of ground beef free in every order for the life of your membership. Log on to butcherbox.com/Duncan. Claim this deal. Go get your meat! Thanks, ButcherBox. Right.
And just a little bit of time can change things. Just a little bit of life experience can change things for you. You know?
The older you get or the more experience you have, then it almost like informs your acting. But for young people who I've seen who are brilliant actors, and you're like, what the fuck has even happened to you that you're somehow able to like fully become these characters? What method are they using? What is the, you know, what are you plugging into as a young actor when you don't have the experiences and you successfully portray some roles, some older roles?
I think it's a translation that happens, you know, amongst different things, you know, whether the translation be like, you know, I was in high school and my girlfriend ended up kissing my best friend. Like, so therefore I understand jealousy. I understand, you know, betrayal. Now now I can take that into my world. So you don't have to be super old to understand. Or even like as a little kid, when your parent promises you that you're going to go get ice cream and then you end up going to the dentist, you know, like.
That betrayal.
You know what I mean? Like, it's there.
Right.
We've all experienced these things from very young ages. How we define them depends on our experience with it, though. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, there are people who have been in abusive homes and didn't even know it because that's normal to them. But then they get somewhere and realize, oh, shit, that was an abusive place.
Right.
Now they have a language for it. Now they have a word for it that they didn't have before because it breaks up the normalcy of things. So I think kid or young actors who have a good grasp that you can tell that a lot of it is like a rawness that comes from them. I think that they're able to translate really easily their life experiences that they've had up to that point.
Right.
But there's also, you know, I think that, you know, people can be polished also.
Right. Well, okay. Before we get into the polished thing, this is what I'm really interested in, is the reservoir of feelings that great actors seem to plug into. And their universe, are they universal? I mean, like, in other words, like, if like the... You might have, when you get older, different methods for connecting with the emotion that this character is probably experiencing. But is there any difference in the betrayal you feel when your parents are supposed to take you to get ice cream and they take you to the dentist, and the betrayal you feel like when, you know, so a business partner stabs you in the back? Even though the story is different, is the feeling the same?
I think so. And I think it's dependent upon the individual. But if you put it out in front of a mass audience, relatability doesn't have a meter, I think. Huh. I think it's like, oh, that's relatable. But, you know, like, no, it's just, it's relatable or it's not.
Right.
It is or it isn't in that sense to me. You know, like if, you know, I'm watching... I don't want to give any spoilers away, but you know, if I'm watching a movie and then like the main character's family who took care of him dies, and you know, and then all of a sudden he's alone in the world again, like I don't know what that feeling is to lose, you know, like someone who raised me, but you know what, I can relate to the feeling of losing someone.
Yeah.
So that's what I attach myself to, you know?
Okay. So you're studying, if you had to read a script like that, you're going to study that. You're going to think to yourself, as your process of getting ready to audition or do this part, you're going to think to yourself, all right, when did I lose somebody? And then invoke that feeling as you read the words. Is that it?
I think I used to do that. But it's really taxing, and you can't really, I don't know. I haven't, at least me, for me, I haven't mastered coming out of my feelings in that way. So when I audition, I usually like, I'm going to give you like a snippet, right? Like, cause it's a free service. Like I'm auditioning and that's a free service. Yeah. I haven't seen any compensation for my worth yet.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a snippet of what I can do, but I'm not going to like fully go all out in an audition, not now, because I feel like in some way I've paid that cost, you know, like I audition tons of times every year, you know, when I first got out here, it was very like, gotta get it right, gotta do good, because it was in person, right? It was like this thing where it was like, I'm meeting you for the first time, and you know, this and this and that.
Yeah.
And then as you get older, or you start to do it more and more, that like something about it becomes a little, what's the term? Is that called lackluster?
Sure.
Like it just kind of fades a little bit.
Yeah.
Like that excitement.
Yeah.
So then when you go into a casting director who hasn't booked you ever, and it's like your 10th time going in, like, I'm not so compelled to like, especially when I see the choices that went up and you think, well, I don't really know why I didn't get this part, but I'm gonna tell you what, I'm gonna give what I feel comfortable with, what I can go home at the end of the day and say, you know what? I gave it to them the way that I feel comfortable.
Right.
And they didn't choose me. Cool. That was their choice. It wasn't mine because I did my job.
I mean, that's the brutal, like that aspect of like living in LA as an actor is just, of all the professions out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like most people, how many job interviews do you go on? in a life. You know, you'll go on like a ton of job interviews and get a job, and then you'll just do that job. But an actor, always job interview after fucking job interview after fucking job interview. And some of these are like jobs where some part of you has got to know you get that job. And like, that's the next level. That's the fucking thing. And also, I'm sorry. I think just no one ever talks about the brutality of driving to Culver City in traffic, trying to like get into a mind state where you can go in front of these people and do the job you're talking about. And so it's not showing that you just drove, you know, an hour and a half through fucking traffic. It's not showing that, like, whatever, your bank account is not, maybe not doing the best.
You're desperate.
Yeah. And you just sat in the lobby with like a literal spectrum of views, you know, like people, and like, there's a more beautiful version of me. There's a less beautiful version of me. There's an older version of me. There's a younger version of me. Right. This rainbow that's supposed to be you. And then they're going to pick one part of that spectrum. Right. It is dehumanizing. It can be so dehumanizing. How do you manage to like keep any sort of like balance and not go insane when you're doing that as an actor?
Well, I think that the really important thing is that you hold on to what's yours and what makes you you, because even though, like you said, there are a rainbow of yous in that room, nobody is you. Right. Nobody. And if you hold on to that, that's why I said, like, I guess, let me clarify what I was saying earlier about, you know, not giving it 100%. I give 100% in my audition, but I give it in the way that I feel comfortable, to where you take me or you don't, right, but this is what I have to offer you.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna do this showboat dance for you that I think you want, because then I'm gonna go home and think about a million different ways I could have done it differently for you in that way.
Right.
But I wouldn't have been happy, because it wouldn't have been my performance.
Right.
I would have been one of the rainbow of people that you saw in the room.
I got you. That's so
smart. You know
what
I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I'll regret in some kind of way. But if I go in and I'm going to give you that little taste that you'll know what I can do, but I'm not going to like, oh, I gave that thing my all, man. I gave it my all. Every single time, you'll burn out.
Right.
And you got to, and it's nothing that's so precious about this business that it doesn't happen again. Like, we keep thinking like, oh man, I want to be a part of that show. I want to be a part of that movie. Yeah. Oh man, that movie did history. Oh, that TV show that made history. But guess what? There will be another show to make history.
Right.
There will be another TV. There will be another movie that does well that people will talk about. Right. And then one day, guess what? No one will talk about it again.
Right.
Yeah. And then you have to go, well, right. You know, and one of my issues that I've had is the idea that I feel like whenever I talk about Get Out, I feel like it puts me right back into 2017. Mm. It puts me right back into this place where everything felt so unsure. And, you know, am I a movie star or not?
Right.
I was in this huge film, but somehow this train felt like it passed me by. I felt like I was witness to so many great things. And in my own life, I couldn't see the joys and the blessings that were happening for me.
Right.
I was letting everyone else dictate the idea of what it must be like to be a part of this thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I'm really sitting here like, they're like, man, I know your phone is blowing up right now. You're like, should it be blowing up right now?
Right.
Should people be seeking me out because I was a part of this thing?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, man, you just gotta, you have to go through life with what makes you comfortable. There are some people who, you know, I was told the other day, I did an interview the other day, and the interviewer told me that the host told me that I was very humble. I was too humble. And I kind of like, you know, thought on that for a minute. Like, what does she mean? What does she mean? I'm too humble. And I think that the idea of like, because I don't like to self-promote.
Yeah.
I don't like to tell people what I do and how I do it and all this kind of like those.
Right.
I'd rather just show you. Yeah. And if I can show you without telling you, then I feel better about myself.
Yes.
If I have to tell you and show you, then I kind of feel like, meh.
It's suspect for sure when someone is telling you that.
But people do it all the time. People do it all the time.
Yeah, sure.
They have to, in a way.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you get on Instagram and everything is perfect on Instagram.
I know.
Everybody's life is perfect on Instagram.
It's really
everybody's
fucked
booking
up.
Something on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah.
But real life, man, it's all sorts of fucked up things that's happening.
This episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by Feels. Feels is a premium CBD that will help to keep your head clear and feel your best. It's hassle-free, and it's delivered directly to your door. CBD naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. There's no hangover or addiction. And if you're me, you can use it for sleep. You just place a few drops of Feels under your tongue, and you feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is important. Everyone's dose is different, so Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience so that you find your perfect dose. The Feels customer service team is dedicated to making sure you get the best use of your CBD. Joining the Feels monthly membership makes your self-care easy. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel at any time. And there's something wonderful about getting a monthly delivery of the greatest CBD on planet Earth. This is Tolkien-level shit. This is the kind of stuff they would drink at Rivendell. This is like the spice melange. This isn't like classic CBD that tastes like you just found some kind of sick mythological creature like a festering gnome and decided to squeeze one of its pustules into your mouth. Oh, no, no, no. This stuff is like the sweet happiness tears of an angel of relaxation. I love Feels. Start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/family hour and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/family hour to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order. That's feals.com/family hour. feals.com/family hour. Thank you, Feels. Yeah, you know, Instagram really is one of the most powerful torture technologies existing in the world right now.
If there is a hell,
you can be certain there's a fucking Instagram in hell. If there's a hell, I guarantee that you could take selfies. I would bet $1 billion that you could take selfies, and people who see your picture of what, like, are like, oh, look at him. Wow, he's really got it made. He only gets his feet chewed off by crocodiles 3 times a day. I'm over here getting sodomized by a giant beetle 24/7.
Yeah.
What the fuck? But then, you know, you're taking a picture of you getting humped by the beetle, and someone's like, yeah. God, look how fucking happy his beetle is. My beetle hates me. His beetle seems to really enjoy. This is like, you know what I mean? This is the torment of Instagram, because, yeah, you're seeing like a fucking tiny millisecond out of these assholes' lives, you know?
Yeah, that's it. Like, just the right angle for a girl, and like all of a sudden she's like a 6 waist and like a Brazilian butt, and you're like, wow, man, that's amazing. But then, like,
yeah,
what happens after that millisecond?
Yeah.
You know,
you don't see it. It's just like porn. It's like porn, you know, porn. You don't see the beginning and the end of whatever this fucking weird thing you're looking at is. You don't see if that were real, what those people would have to deal with for the rest of their lives after that, whatever the fuck they did. It's true, man. It's like, this is, it's definitely a good reason to avoid Instagram. Or, you know what I do? I follow monks. I follow a bunch of fucking like Tibetan Buddhists. So my Instagram has always got, just, I can't really understand it, shit in like Sanskrit and someone going, I don't know, you seem happy.
Yeah, you seem happy. You seem like you'll get me there. So why not? Yeah, man. You just gave me a thought about what if hell was like this place where you could literally do the one thing you enjoyed the most, but you could do nothing else. Like, but like eventually you would get tired of it. Like you would like want to do something else, but then you would like get tortured to keep doing it.
Oh, dude.
Like Homer Simpson and donuts.
Oh yeah. That actually is. Hold on. You know what? Look at this. Look at this. I just got this book in the mail today. It's called The Treasury of Precious Qualities. And it's it's this Tibetan Buddhist text. And you know, it's so funny. Listen, I'll just read this to you. The first chapter is called The Value of Human Existence. And it says, let me find it. This is fucking intense. It's so funny you're talking about this. So long enchanted in samsara's wilderness, tormented by the cutting of their heads and limbs, with seeds of future sorrow hidden in their minds, beings long so foolishly for bliss of higher realms. From there they fall again, their states of mind destroying them, to wander in three evil realms, or as insensate gods, or else in barbarous lands with false views, handicapped in places where the Buddhas have not come. On blazing iron grounds without reprieve, with dreadful weapons, wounded time and time again, the denizens of hell are slain but cannot die, still tangled in the webs of hatred's evil deeds. What need is there to say that hungry ghosts are racked by want? For food they find not even pus or blood or filth, and streams and orchards dry before their eyes. Their vitals burn in endless pain, their length of life uncertain, measured by the strength of obscuration. Beasts prey on one another, are each other's food, and hunters quarry. They are slain by cruel means, or caught and tamed. They are reduced to bondage, born to great misery. What can they do? Anyway, it's like just what it's describing. Yeah. What, you know, the problem with Instagram is it gives you a sense that there's this possibility. You know, if you believe the shit you're seeing in the shiny, happy people on Instagram, then you get this sense of like, oh, I'm fucking up. Well, I'm not in Tulum. I'm fucking up. I'm not in a private plane. I'm fucking up. I'm not experiencing like whatever, you know, generally no one's taking an Instagram picture of their messy fucking room that they haven't cleaned in 3 days. And obviously you can't Instagram how bad you stink. So it's like it gives you a sense of, if I had that, I would be happy. And it's the biggest fucking lie, because it generally isn't the fucking case.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I try my best now, and I'm a lot better with it, to like just keep a steady flow of like who and what I follow, and like, you know, like I don't stay following the same thing, you know, over and over, unless like it's like constant contact, you know, like, oh yeah, I constantly contact you and we talk on a regular on Instagram, like, then, you know, but for the most part, I just don't even participate. I'm like a voyeur, really. And when I've had enough, I'm just like, I'm good. I'd rather play a game or something on my phone. If I'm gonna be diddling, like play a brain game or something, challenge myself.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? But the trick really is to focus on you. To really focus on you and to find that happiness. Because in 2017, I couldn't find that happiness for myself. You know, I couldn't find, I just kept looking at everything that was going wrong.
You're saying in the midst of, like, you know, being in one of the, like, the best, the greatest horror movies of the last God knows how long, you still weren't there. It was like there was no it wasn't soothing you or fixing something.
Well, you know, you have these dreams of making it, you know, or making it, whatever it's supposed to mean for the individual. But I had these dreams of making it when I came out here. And for me, that the idea of making it is just being of worth, being a commodity in terms of, like, in what I do. You know, everywhere I've gone, I felt like I was of value to the community, you know?
Yeah.
And in Hollywood, I would like to see myself of value,
yeah,
you know, to the community. And so I came here with these dreams. And so the first thing I booked was Django Unchained. And I felt like, wow, I'm working with Quentin Tarantino. Not everybody gets to do that every day.
No.
So this is my way in. This is the thing. And that wasn't the thing. You know what I mean? Like, everything that we said and the thing got cut out, and like a lot of scenes got cut out that we did. We worked on it for like 3 weeks, and wow, I was attached to it for like a year.
Yeah.
And didn't know anything. Wasn't aware that, like, nobody gives a shit. Like, if you go do another job.
Right.
If you're on schedule, left contract, like, nobody gives a shit. Just go and do the job.
Right.
I was like, oh, do I go do the job?
My agents
are like, well, I don't know. It's a chance you might piss off Harvey Weinstein and Quentin Tarantino. And I was like, oh, well, is that a bad thing? Because I don't know any better. Is that a bad thing?
Yeah.
They're like, I wouldn't want to do it.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I won't do the thing. And so then, like, I lose these jobs and this confidence in me kind of dwindles a little bit, right? Like, so I move on to go do other things. And before you know it, like, I got a family now. And then I'm working at a hotel and I'm not doing the thing that I came here to do.
Yeah.
And people that I went to grad school with are winning Oscars and,
yeah,
you know, like, being in big time movies. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now?
Right.
And I did some real soul searching, man. And it was just like, I need a sign that I'm here for a reason or I'll just go. And a good friend of mine, Patricia McGregor, brilliant director, she called me to come do a play. And I went to go do the play and subsequently I had to quit my job. In the quitting of my job, I booked a new TV series, a commercial,
yeah,
all this stuff. So things were moving. I was like, yeah, this is it. This is what I want.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing. And it just kind of like snowballed into like a career where I was able to take care of my family and do nice things and you know, like, actually be of value of my community. But I still didn't feel like I was there yet. This idea of there.
Yeah.
And so finally Get Out happens. And like when we were filming it, it felt like it was going to be special, you know?
Right.
We knew, like, Jordan was so confident and so, like, he just knew it was going to be iconic. He was like, that's going to be iconic. He's calling everything iconic. That's going to be iconic. Wow. That's going to be iconic. And I was just like, yeah, man, like, I love that in a leader. I love the idea of a leader that's confident. I'll follow a confident leader over a cliff, man.
I promise. Same.
'Cause it's just like, yeah, man, this makes sense. Like, it feels right. The trailer released, so that was in February 2016. The trailer released in September 2016, and the internet lost its mind. And that's when we were like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, that was different. And then in 2017, it went to Sundance, and it, like, premiered at Sundance. But guess who knew about it?
Who?
Not this guy.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm a part of this thing. That was like number one. That was like the first, like, blow, I would say, right?
Okay.
Then the movie actually premiered, but they were like, it's not going to be a premiere. It's just a screening because they didn't want to call it a premiere.
Okay.
And I went, and we went in these, like, street clothes, and it was a full-on fucking premiere, man.
Oh, man. What?
And, like, you know, it was just like,
How did that happen?
I don't know, man. I have no idea. But, like, it just wasn't communicated. And it ended up being this, like, wildfire, dude, that just, like, spread like crazy. And I was doing a play at the Kirk Douglas at the time. And, like, I just didn't really focus on it because I had something else I could focus on. And by the time I came out of it, man, like, it was just like everything was just hitting me in the face. People were doing the fucking run everywhere. And, you know, people were, you know, quoting the movie everywhere. It was all sorts of tremendous artwork that came out of it. So I started catching up on all this when I finished the play, and I was about a month and a half out. I was like, oh, wow, this is crazy. Look at all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, that's when the train left, I feel like. That's when I, like, I was just, I kind of came out of it like, oh, okay, well, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it was just, and there was just no guidance. But what I believe about this industry, though, is like, you know, it takes some sort of sponsorship, you know, to really make it, you know. It takes somebody to put their arm around you and say, hey, kid, let me show you.
Right.
You know, you learn the game, you play the game, you teach the game, in that order.
Wow, that's cool.
I feel like I'm in this like in between space of learning and playing, and I'm playing the game. I'm all out playing the game now.
Yeah, but this is what I think is so incredible about that city. This is why that city will always be one of the coolest places. There, regardless of like whatever particular shit it's going through, the reason it's always going to be one of the coolest places is because, you know what, it doesn't matter what size of fucking fish you are, that pond is so goddamn big. There's fucking Leviathan swimming around in there. You know, there's like things that are like, so, you know, no matter this sense of scale that you might get living in a place that's with a smaller population density, fewer artists. You know, it goes out the window. So this is one of the like things that can happen to a working actor is you start thinking, you find yourself post Get Out feeling somehow like not insecure, but just a sense of like, man, I need to fucking work harder.
Or somewhat insignificant because I'm a part of this thing and all of a sudden I don't feel like I'm a part of this thing. In fact, it got so bad, Duncan. Let me tell you how bad it got, bro. It got so bad that most places that I went, people thought that I was Daniel Kaluuya, the star of the movie.
Fuck.
And I couldn't think to myself, how is this possible? It's only four black men in the movie.
That's brutal, man.
And how do you not... How do you get us confused?
Brutal.
And it happened everywhere. It happened at award shows. It happened on the street. It happened on the job. Like, it was so many. It, at this point, I just call it being Danieled. I got Danieled.
Oh, my God. That sucks so bad.
It all sucked. It all sucked. But here's the thing, man. You go through that. You suck it up. You recognize, you know, the things that you would do differently if you could do it differently and blah, blah, blah. But you ultimately realize, I got to move forward with this.
Right.
I got to move forward with this thing. And I think that's why I'm able to joke about it. I mean, I've been able to joke about it, but it's just like this idea, though, like when I hear somebody talk about an expectation that they might have from my experiences, it makes me, it kind of sends me in a little wormhole of like, huh, you think so? And then I have to remember to align with my expectations and align with my purpose.
Right.
You know, because expectations only are born from purpose, I think. You know?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I like that. I mean, this is... I think this is just a double-edged sword of the profession you've chosen. It's just, you know, there's so many sand traps for an actor. Like there's the sand trap of, you know, fame or getting addicted to the fireworks that come after you, your a show that you worked on a year ago or 2 years ago comes out. That's another thing people don't realize is the weird spacing. Like you shoot a thing and all this time passes and then suddenly, wait, you almost forgot about it. And then boom, there it is. Boom.
It's there.
And but you've already been away from those people probably in that experience for a while now.
Yeah.
So that's fucking weird. But then that's the sand trap of success where, you know, or rather the perceived success, which is something I think plagues like actors who are like taking off, is like, you know, there's this insane naive judgment that people are putting on you, which is that,
oh yeah,
you know, my God, was so like, you did it, congratulations. And then you have to like, you know, you either have to pretend, yeah, I did it, isn't it great? Or like correct them to make them understand, no, you don't get it. This is job to job to job to job. Yeah. It's not like one thing. It never ends.
And I think that's a part of the actor's job too, or the person in entertainment, is that you're supposed to pretend like it's all good and it's all like, right, I love this, because people think, oh, what you do, you sit on this cushy, you know, you just work for however long. And, you know, I don't know, like people have told me that, oh man, I wish I could be an actor, man. I have it easy. And it's like, it's not a easy fucking thing to do.
No.
It's not an easy thing to keep your focus for fucking 13 hours. Ugh. Or like, if you're called in at 6 a.m., you get up at 5, depending on the location.
5, 4, 4, you get up at, you know, 4, what I mean? Depending on where
you get up at
is.
4. You going in, you know, and then all of a sudden you got to go through the works and everything like that. Everything is go, go, go. Then everything is stop.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you don't know if it's stopping for 10 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours.
Week.
But when they call you back, you better damn sure be ready.
Oh, you can't fuck up. You cannot fuck up. That's the thing. This is like, it's such a high level. It's like, you know, it's like when you're like, when you, I don't remember the names of these players, but you look at the people dropping the ball last night in that
number
game.
10.
That
number
haunts
10.
Them for the number 10 drops the ball, haunts them for the rest of their life. But you know, that's the other thing. Yeah. I remember when I ended up on, I don't remember the first time I got to see a movie being filmed. I wasn't in it. I was dating someone in the movie. But yeah. I remember going in there with all the things that your friends were telling you, like, all right, here we go. I can't wait to see this, like, romantic, glitzy, cushy bullshit. And then you realize this is like the most fucking technical, like completely there's no, it's not like you're filming it from like point A to point B to point C.
Yeah.
It's like, we need to get you walking to the car, and you need to step on this mark at this exact time and then get in the car and shut the door. You're going to do that 40 fucking times. And you know, that kind of, and you can't fuck up. The car is going to fuck up. Someone's going to fuck up with the lighting. Something's going to fuck up with an extra. But you can't fuck up because you're the fucking actor. So you can't fuck up. And if you do, you know, people get pissed.
Now everybody's
pissed
because you've cost us time now.
Oh God. Like, did you see the Shining documentary when Stanley Kubrick's just tormenting Shelley Duvall?
I heard about it.
Oh God. She came out at the wrong time. They got snow blowers. You know, they're doing all, like, it was the maze scene. She comes out at the fucking wrong time. Kubrick just like, doesn't eviscerate her. I think he just goes like, Shelley. And it's just like, oh, the having Stanley Kubrick chastising you. It's a brutal job. It's a technical job. And it's a fucking boring job too, right? You're sitting around all the time.
You're sitting around and, you know, you're trying to do things to keep yourself occupied, but also trying to keep your mind on the job, you know?
Yeah.
Because like, it's still a job to do. And it's hard, you know, like it's not easy. I'm not going to say it's hard. It's not it's not an easy task to do, and not just anybody can do it. You know what I mean?
It's hard, man. I think it's safe to say it's hard. I mean, there's a reason it's only a few people ever
exactly.
even get a part ever. It's because it's so hard, and the people you're up against are all incredibly good at what they do. And so, yeah, it's a brutal job. I think that's and actors, you're right. They have to kind of play cheerleaders for the movie that they're in, or they have to, you know, play cheerleaders for their own career or whatever. And so
yeah, man.
And they're actors, so they're fucking good at it. So
because our job is to keep people in disbelief.
Right.
To keep people suspended in disbelief.
Yes.
I'll give you a good example. I work with an actor, and he's in one of my favorite movies of all time. I won't say what it is, okay, or who he is, but one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
And I was like, and we were together, we were about to do something, and I made a reference to the movie, and I I thought it would be so perfect. And he looked at me and he looked me dead in my eyes and said, "I hated my experience on that movie."
Wow.
And now it changed the movie for me. Now it's like, but if he would have just did his fucking job and said, "Oh yeah, man, that was fucking great," I would still love that movie. I would still be able to look at that movie the same.
Right.
Because I want to be suspended in disbelief in that movie. Like, it's fucking funny.
Look, most of the time, you use the internet without a VPN, you're probably going to be fine. But do you really want that feeling after you use the computer at a cafe, that same feeling you used to get when you had a one-night stand and didn't wear a condom or use protection? You know, you'll probably be okay, right? You don't want that. You don't want to worry if some hacker in some stall used some packet sniffer to siphon up all your data to sell it in the hell markets of the dark web. ExpressVPN creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. Hackers can't steal your sensitive data. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. And you know what? If they want your data that bad, let them have it. It's easy to use. You fire up the app, click one button to get protected. Works on all devices. I love it because it's simple. It makes me feel safe. You just press the button. You can also say what country you want to be in, which is pretty cool. And interesting the way it changes what kind of news you get. Get a VPN. Protect yourself. We're not living in the 80s anymore. People are just sucking up data like spaceships flying over, just sucking innocent people up and flying them off into meteor mines. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/Duncan. That's expressvpn.com/Duncan. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/Duncan.
Because I want to be suspended in disbelief in that movie. Like, it's fucking funny.
Yeah. Yeah. God, that's so true. That's so true. Some people, they, during the course of filming a movie, they are living in fucking hell that they can't get out of. It is horrible. They might feel like the opposite of how you felt in Get Out, which is like, you're in a movie and you start getting the sense, this isn't going to be good. And you're like, I'm going to be in a shitty fucking movie. Like, I'm about to be in a garbage fucking movie because this just sucks. And that's brutal too. I mean, yeah, acting is a brutal fucking job psychologically. It's a torturous job.
When I played a slave in Django, there was a moment where I was literally like, you know, I was behind Jamie Foxx in the movie. I played a character named Big Sid. And I had to pee really bad one, like, this is like one of the first takes that we were doing of the shoot.
Mm.
And I had to pee so bad because we had took so long and they had us in these chains just sitting there waiting, like, you know, because the camera could be ready at any moment. Right.
Yeah.
But still, nonetheless, I'm sitting here, this black man in chains in 2011. Thinking to myself, like, what the fuck, man? What am I doing? You know, psychologically,
up.
I'm like fucking going through it because I'm thinking to myself, like, why am I doing this, man? Like, this is, And I chalked it up to paying dues, but even that, like, don't even feel like paying dues. It just felt like, you know what I mean? Like, because I can see how it, you know, how one thing led to the next thing, kind of like, so I see why I did Django. Like, I understand why I did it. Like, I'm all for it. But I can tell you the feeling I had when I was there and I had to pee and I had to ask somebody permission to, like, unlock my chains so I could go, and still kind of pissed on myself trying to get to the woods because there was no bathroom. Like, who wants to go through that? Who actually wants to go through that?
Yeah.
Who actually is thinking to themselves, oh man, acting is fucking great, man. I'm so glad I went to Yale for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure. Like, it's this thing, man. And I'm not trying to, you know, take anybody's, you know, suspense and disbelief out of it.
I don't think you are. I mean, I think anyone who's, like, you know, a fan of film and has, like, looked into it a little deeper knows exactly what you're talking about. I mean, that's a part of why we love actors. We don't just love y'all because you're so good at being other people. I think there's the, like, we sort of, at least in, there's an intuition that, like, oh, the magic that you all are capable of working, it comes at a price. It's like a it's a very difficult form of magic. I mean, it's so, like, my friends who are actors, the amount of preparation that goes into, you know, even the smallest roles, the amount they just pour their lives into So do you think part of the, what makes it so difficult is that, you know, most really good actors like you have had experience in theater where there isn't someone, like, cutting every few seconds, where you have to go through all the way, and so you get to fully become the role without having to try to be this role while you're sitting
for, like, for 10
four.
Seconds at a time.
Absolutely.
I think that being able to find the character, I mean, something that's interesting about theater, or at least to me, the most interesting thing about theater is the idea that, like, you're not the only one that's going to play this role. You're not the only person that's going to touch and say these words.
Right.
So now you have to make it uniquely you.
Wow. Yeah.
You know,
right.
In TV and film, I mean, like, it's rare, but there are remakes. There are, you know, so you get to, like, but there are new words. There's a new script. Nobody, like, does a script for word for word.
Right.
Remake, you know, I've not seen that before, or maybe I don't know, but, you know, the idea is that in theater, you literally just get to do it the way you would do it.
Right.
Cause it's gotta be you.
Yeah.
If you do it, if you're trying to do it, like, if I'm trying to do Othello, like Paul Robeson, then, you know, that's going to be me doing Paul Robeson. It's not going to be me being Othello.
Right.
You know, and that's what I think I did the first time I did Othello. It's like, I was trying to be Paul Robeson. I was like, oh, Desdemona, blah, blah, blah. Like, trying to talk all deep.
Can I tell you what I wish?
What's that?
I wish I could say the first time I did Othello. That's what I wish. Not that that would necessarily be the role they pick for me, but you know what I mean? I wish I could say the first time I did Hamlet. And also, I don't know who the person you just mentioned is. I mean, like, this is to me the problem that happens when you become a professional, is that you're around professionals a lot, and you're around other people who probably went to Yale. You're around other people who, and so it's easy to forget. This is the same with, like, spiritual teachers. You know, sometimes I'll be talking to, like, some of these Ram Dass teachers.
Yeah.
And I realize, like, these people, I don't know if they would call themselves enlightened or if it's fair to call anyone that necessarily, but these people have literally found a way to be peaceful for years at a time. Where if I can go a day without falling into some neurotic vortex, that's a good fucking day. You know what I mean? And I think sometimes it's not like they forget, but they just, you know, that's what I think is cool about getting to talk to, like, professionals, is to, like, you don't realize how fucking cool that is to be, like, you know, first time I played Othello.
Yeah, yeah. Or,
you know, what an accomplishment that is. Like, what a,
yeah.
You know, all those things. But really, doesn't matter, does it? It's over. That's not happening anymore. That's all gone.
Yeah.
There's just right now and everything
right
after
now.
This, and that's it. So all that stuff, who cares? Nothing's there. It's you got to keep going, and you have to keep getting better, and that's it. If you want to, you know, be an actor.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, you know, like we were saying earlier, living in your experience fully really does feed you out in your acting. You know, when I was, one of the things I had to deal with, especially during COVID and things like that, was the idea that sometimes you're just not working. Like, you know, I told you, like, 2014, things kind of took off. I hadn't had really that much time off since 2014, you know, given the amount of projects and stuff.
Yeah.
So now I have a little more time on my hands, and I have to live fully in what I have. And I have two beautiful children and a loving wife.
Yes.
And, you know, like, this, and three dogs now. And, like,
three.
You know, like, yeah, dude. It's a whole thing.
You got a COVID dog?
We got two COVID dogs.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't know what Aaron and I were talking about that. A lot of our friends are getting dogs, like pandemic dogs.
I don't know what happened, man. It's like, who let the dogs out, literally, like, but they are all over the streets and they need homes.
Yeah.
And
that's beautiful.
So,
good for you. Yeah. And you're, and also, man, you've got a beautiful house and, like, you know, yeah, I know you like that. To me, that can actually be a little challenging sometimes because, challenging in a good way, but you know what I'm talking about when you hit those moments of bliss with your family and it's like the, whatever the universe is resonating in the most simple way around you and your kids and your wife. And you realize this is, you can't do better than this. No matter what, I don't care what the fuck it is. Nothing will ever be this, nothing will ever feel this good as far as accolades or, getting better at a thing or whatever. Nothing beats this. And so then that's where I sometimes am faced with a strange sense of like, what the fuck? What am I doing? You know what I mean? Like, the desire to just be with your family, live a simple life, you know, and make that your fundamental practice, you know, pops into my head sometimes, but I love creating stuff and I love making the podcast. I love getting to have conversations like this, but,
exactly.
And I don't want to hierarchize the experience in the world or anything like that, but there does seem to be a little bit of a, I don't know, an accidental kind of, trickery happening in the world where people are being shown via Instagram or, you know, lifestyles of the rich and famous or their own fantasies, this version of reality where you've made it when, and it's trickery because some people who are crazy enough to be called into that lifestyle, they make it. And then they realize that they, nothing really has changed emotionally for them. Nothing is, but then, whereas if you're just hanging out with your kids and your wife, somehow you've made it. But yeah, what did you do? You didn't do Othello. You didn't go to Yale. You like, you came inside of someone cool.
Yeah. And was able to build something with that person.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to reduce our like fatherhood to you know, the way
it
happened.
I mean,
clearly you got to work your way through the other shit. You don't just get to come and then retire.
would that be a sweet gig though?
It's called a sperm donor.
Yeah, it's true. But it's a lot of requirements. So I thought like maybe you just like go and do it and then be done. But no, it's like a whole thing. You got to bring paperwork.
Really?
You got to prove who you are.
Does that make sense?
IQ got to be a certain level or something like that.
When I got cancer, I had to like put my jizz on ice. And now I'm still connected to that sperm bank. And I get updates when they've got new sperm. It's the funniest thing in these emails. Like, we've got a professor. We've got Professor Jizz.
And I would love it if it was like emojis that came with that, like the little like emoji with glasses. Like, look what we got, you guys.
It's basically like that. Like, and I was too lazy to like sign up. Like, I wanted to get jizz, but you know, I think you can go to videos of them being like, "Hello, I love music. I know how to play the cello."
Oh my God! Of course, of course. I think that like, you know, just to hop on what you were saying earlier, you know, when about balance, the balance, you know, I have this thought that life, when we look at it, it's sort of like the process of growing a plant, right? Or planting the seed. We water it. We make sure it gets sunlight. We make sure that, you know, when it grows and we take care of it as it grows, but then it bears fruit and we enjoy the fruit.
Yeah.
Right. We enjoy the labor of our work to get to that fruit.
Yes.
And I think that for me, the planting the seeds part is really enjoyable when I'm with my kids and my wife and we're building memories that we'll think about in 10, 20 years. And that will be the fruit of the labor that we put in that moment. When it comes to work and the balance of work, I'm still figuring it out. I'm still like thinking, you know, but when I'm planting the seed at work, I'm planting the seeds of like when I'm auditioning, when I'm putting things on tape, when I'm meeting somebody new for the first time, like I'm really trying to make an impression so that 10, 20 years down the line, you know, whatever I've been doing is watering the seeds. Whatever my past work is, shedding light on the things that I put seeds on so that something can grow beautifully.
Yeah.
You know, so like in my friendships, in my family, you know, I'm really just trying to create moments so that, you know, years down the line, you know, I am of value to my community, you know?
Right.
In the in memoriam section of the Oscars, man, I want them to play a video clip of me, man. I want to just be a picture.
You want the fucking clip.
I want the clip.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I get it, man.
Show them the clip of me and not just a running dude. You know what I mean? Like I want a real fucking moment, like where I'm like whipping around, taking my glasses off and saying, we want the whole truth.
You know what? Probably by the time you die, it's not going to be a video of you. It's going to be you in a hologram with an AI that's replicated your personality because you signed some fucking contract in a movie and you didn't pay enough attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Warner Brothers literally owns the AI representation of you, which it will probably say, hey, I just want everyone to know, did my meat vehicle die? Yes. But I'm still here. I'm fine.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep acting for infinity because I've become a drone owned by Warner Brothers. I think a lot of you actors, that's what is going to happen to you. I think that like, that's one of the real scary things about what's happening right now with some of the deep fake shit. Everyone's like, people just don't realize how that's going to decimate the industry. Not now, but I'd say in 10 years, 15 years from now, that's going to like be apocalyptic for actors.
Man. It's going to be apocalyptic for a lot of things because, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've gotten at least 3 or 4 messages from friends who have, you know, sent videos and I thought it was them. It was their voice. It was their faces. It was their bodies. And they were like, yo, sign up with this girl. Invest $10 and she'll turn it into $1,000. Like stuff like that. And it was like, whoa, wait a minute. Whoa, 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 whoa. What's going on here? You know, like to a point where it's like.
Wait, what? The deep fakes of your friends were trying to get you into some kind of scam?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, dude. Like just regular people. It's not even like they're famous. Just regular people.
I've not gotten one of those. That is terrifying.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
What?
And they're out there, man. They're out there.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's so crazy to me. I mean, that's the end of everything.
Dude, do you realize the best thing you can do for yourself is to literally hang on to the real relationships you have with people, like literally the people that you can call on the phone and say, hey, how you doing? Let's meet for lunch. Like those people, because it's just going to get to a point, man, between deep fakes and the metaverse and, you know, freaking COVID, like stay at home orders, man, we gotta hold on to one another, man. Cause pretty soon they're going to have us all in these fucking pods and we're just going to see each other on the internet.
Oh my God. I mean,
in our fake fucking bodies and shit, like living the lie that we see on Instagram every day in the actual world.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. I that was one of my like paranoid moments during the pandemic early on. I don't think anymore, but early on I thought, oh, maybe this is just what happens when you die. You know, like you die, the world seems exactly the same way, but all of a sudden you can only communicate to people mostly in 2D space. And, you know, the way that you're seeing it as technology or whatever, but you're dead. You're in the Bardo and none of this is real. But then, you know, I just realized that's just, why am I fucking letting my mind tell me this shit? You know, like, why am I listening to that part of my mind? I have a very, very, like, powerfully poetic, manipulative shadow side that if I let it start talking, I'll be, like, under the bed. Scared to death. But I know what you mean. It's like, you know, what is, after all of this bullshit that we're going through, what do we have that is stable? Or what do we have that is at least more stable than the week-to-week, you know, drama and chaos that keeps appearing and shaking the fabric of society? And I think that it's your friends, it's your community. It seems obvious, but somehow it's easy to forget that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, you it's easy to forget because, again, when we look at Instagram, everything is so fucking perfect that we don't even decide. We've decided already that that person has a perfect life and I'm not even a part of it. So therefore, you know, I'm not a part of what I'm seeing on Instagram. So therefore, I'm not a part of this person's fucking perfect life.
Right.
But what it really takes is a phone call to say, hey, how are you? And you'll learn that things aren't so perfect.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You'll learn that, oh, I actually am of value because I actually care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're saying like if you fall prey to the Instagram thing, I mean, actually, if your fucking Instagram is making you seem too happy, you're really like, that's a self-destructive Instagram. Like,
you know, I don't know the details of what happened to the young lady recently who jumped out of her window.
Oh, right.
Who worked for one of those outlets. But, you know, everything, one of the conversations that I saw around it was like, you don't know what somebody, everything can look so perfect. Everything can look so perfect. She was Miss USA. She was a lawyer.
Yeah.
She was a correspondent who got to interview stars.
Yeah.
30 years old. Healthy.
Hanging out with Lady Gaga.
Hanging out with Lady Gaga. One of Zendaya's favorite, like, people to interview her.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, that all doesn't sound good. Yeah, that fills up about 10 minutes of space in my brain. And then I think about the rest of the fucked up stuff in the world.
Yeah. Right.
And now I can't take it. So that's why it's important, man. No matter what it's looking like, no matter if you think that, oh, I haven't talked to this person in years or I haven't seen this person in so long. If you think about them, check on them.
You know what? I love that, man. I'm going to start doing that because sometimes I'll think about somebody and I'll think I'm going to check on them. And in fact, once, a few years ago, that did happen to me, man. Not to give some morality fucking story here. I did have that impulse. It popped into my head. I haven't talked to them in a while. Wonder how they're doing. Didn't follow through on that. They were dead in like 6 days. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they that's something I like get to live with, is that weird haunting, like, whoa, man.
Yeah.
Was I sensing something? Shit. What the fuck? Why didn't I do that? It'd be so easy to call them. I guess sometimes though we feel intrusive. Like if you haven't talked to someone in a while, even though you might be friends, even though you love them, sometimes you feel like, I don't want to fucking just call them out of the blue.
But Duncan, being from the South, you know just as much as I do that everybody appreciates a nice, how you doing? You know, everybody, at least in the South where I know the South, everybody appreciates a nice stop by, a nice, like, you know, catch up. Because it's not like anybody's rushing to get anywhere or do anything. It's just a, hey, man, you know, just a nice little stop and chat. People love that.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in Alabama, when I was growing up in St. Louis, man, people love sitting out on their porch. You just walking by and you just like, hey, how you doing? And it's just a quick little something. I mean, older people keep you there longer, but, you know, for the most part, it's nice. It's a good feeling that somebody's saying, hey, I'm thinking about you, enough to take my time out to check up on you.
Yeah.
You know, because as you get older, I noticed too, and I noticed this when I was younger too, older people always appreciated it, because at the older you get, man, like you just kind of get pushed out of that loop, unless you Jay-Z, you know what I mean? Like you just get kind of pushed out of the fold and nobody's thinking about you.
Yeah.
Because they want the new shiny thing that's in front of you.
You're invisible. Yeah.
You get older, you get invisible, you get set in your ways, you don't want to go out, you don't want to do new things.
No.
So you get older, so when somebody calls you and says, hey, I'm thinking about you.
It's the best.
Man, how much do you appreciate that?
It's the best.
It's the fucking best.
I don't know. It's so true. It's so true. It's like, it's always cool when someone does that to me. It's always cool no matter what. You're like, whoa, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
I'm so fucking busy trying to be busy. And all of a sudden, somebody's like, hey, man, take a minute out. I'm thinking about you. Oh, shit. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. What's up? And I can do the same. It's people who I think about my journey and the people I think about, man, I probably haven't talked to in 20 years. And, you know, and it depends. Some people you don't need to talk to again. You know, you can just kind of thank them from afar and put good energy out there for them, you know. But it's some people, it would probably make their day if I would just call and say, hey, I'm thinking about you.
Yeah, totally. Except your ex-girlfriends.
Except my ex-girl. You cannot call.
Not when you're married.
Man. Not when you're married, dude. Like, it's just not fair. I used to be of a different mind, man. But, you know, I've grown to understand and learn that it's just don't do it, man. It just keeps things peaceful.
Yeah, right. But you know one thing I do now that you taught me?
What's that?
This is what's cool about having friends, is they give you things that stick with you for the rest of your life. But you know the thing you're telling me, you touch a tree?
Oh, yeah.
Now when I touch trees, I think of people I love.
Yep.
Can you tell people about that? Because it's the coolest thing ever.
So I have this theory about trees, and I'm pretty sure it's probably something out there on it, but trees are like rooted into the earth, right? They're rooted into, like, the roots touch each other, man. It's like electricity, the water and all this stuff. They have to do it to live. So when these roots, they're channels, they communicate with each other. So if I'm at a tree here in Los Angeles, then I can communicate with a tree that's back in St. Louis. I can communicate with a tree that's in New York.
Yeah.
You know, like, because the roots are all connected. They're all in the earth.
Yeah.
You know, so the next time you're out, I challenge you all to go and touch a tree. Think about somebody. Send them a message. See if that person contacts you in the next, like, however long it takes. For me, it took 4 days for each person that I've, like, done that for. And I'm not somebody who's out there doing it all the time, but the times that I have done it, it's taken 4 days. at the most for a person to contact me that I've thought about.
That is so cool. Yeah, it works.
It really does, man. It's crazy. It's crazy.
So I just a few days ago interviewed this a lama, a Tibetan teacher.
Yeah.
And Tibetan Buddhist teacher. She wasn't Tibetan, but she was telling me the exact same thing, except through meditation. So the idea being that when you meditate, when in Tibetan Buddhism, time and space aren't linear. They're like everything's happening at the same time, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's the same idea, except you could do the same thing for like Buddhas. You could do the same thing for, because when you're meditating and you drop in whatever the place is, there's a lot of words for it. You are in the same, you become the same thing as everyone who's ever lived and is going to live in the future. And so in that moment, you're like part of this network where you can send ping people, basically. You know, you can like, you know, ask for help. Prayer is what it's generally called as prayer. But it's an interesting concept with the, I like the trees because it's a little easier to touch a tree than to meditate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, they got this, I got a gift from Warner for Christmas this year, and it's called a core. Have you ever heard of this thing?
Nope.
Okay, so it's just like this little like oblong ball looking thing with these sensors on the top of it. And it connects to an app, and the app does guided meditations. Wow. And you put your thumbs on it, and it starts the core, this little oblong ball. And it starts to vibrate. And what basically it's doing is it's giving you a focal point to concentrate on. And it's kind of like what your mom was talking about in Midnight Gospel, right? About feel your fingertips.
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel your fingertips? Like, can you feel it? But it's in the form of this vibrating machine. And you don't lose your concentration. You're listening to what they're saying. But like anytime your mind tries to travel, the ball is vibrating and it's like teaching you these breathing techniques. So, you know, there's one called the box breath where you breathe in four, you hold it.
Oh, yeah.
Let go four, you hold it, then you breathe back in four, you know. So, box breathing, they do the reset breath where you breathe in four, you let go eight, you know, it's like all these different things and they're guiding you in a meditation. It's so like, I never thought I would be in a meditation like that. I meditate, but never like this, man, to a point where I'm like awake by the end of it and actually energized and I'm focusing on my breath. I've never had that type of experience before. So
have you've been doing this regularly with this thing?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Absolutely. That's great, man. That's great. Yeah,
yeah man.
That kind of stuff. I have a book on it. I think it's called pranayama. It's like various weird methods of breathing, breathing through your nose. Very important. Mm-hmm. There's a great book. I wish I could remember the name. I was reading on breath. It was saying, like, people who breathe through their nose, who have formerly been mouth breathers, when you start breathing through your nose, it'll literally change the shape of your face, like. The effect of just breathing in through your mouth is causing, you know, a certain type of facial characteristic. And that if you start breathing through your nose, it changes everything. Like, the breath is the fundamental thing that keeps us here. Outside of our, you know, our mothers bringing us here and our father bringing us here, breath is what keeps you alive. And it's the most overlooked fucking thing. You don't think about it. You breathe all day long. You pay no attention. You assume you're breathing the right way because it's how you're alive. But when like people start altering their breathing patterns, then a lot of diseases go away. Like allergies that people have, really awful allergies that can go away. It's a cool book. That's interesting, man. I'm going to look up this core thing. I want one.
Yeah, dude, it's I would say it's worth it, man. I want to get, you know, Sarah really isn't into like the technology and stuff, so she can, and you know, she's like crazy with the healing stuff now too, so like she can do all that stuff, man. She can get her hands so hot. Hot.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Marcus's wife is a healer, like super advanced person in general.
Yeah.
That stuff's bizarre. They can heat their hands up. What the fuck is that? That's one of the things. I think it's called Tomo or something. Like the monks can like heat their body up so much that it melts snow around them. It's so weird. Marcus, we're going to be in town. We're flying in on Sunday and we're in town for a week. Can we hang out?
Yes.
Awesome. Yes. Okay, cool. Great.
Yes.
Great. Awesome.
Oh my goodness, man. I'm so glad you just dropped that on me just now. Like that just like, let's just start this whole thing all over again, man. I got a whole new wind.
No, man. Now. No, this was fantastic. I really appreciate you being honest about acting and a career out there because I just think it's a good thing for all of us to hear. It's a reminder Absolutely. To all of us that, you know, not to pay too much attention to Instagram, not to get too caught up in like this fantasy that there's any kind of place in the world where there isn't like suffering, you know. I'm so glad but also it's like you're such a good actor, man. Like you don't even realize it. All my friends were you don't realize it. Y'all don't realize how magical you are because you realize it, I think. But just when you were talking about raising in the sun, you didn't see your face. I mean you became that person just in that second. You were it's the weirdest thing to watch from those of us who that's not our path. It's just such a bizarre thing to watch. So I hope you never stop doing it.
Never. I will never stop.
Can you tell people where to find you, Marcus?
Oh man, you can find me on Instagram at MarcusHenderson314. And you can also find me on Twitter at MarcusAx314. You know, I haven't done the TikTok thing yet.
Don't fuck with TikTok. I mean, no offense to anybody out there, but I've never found a more manipulative satanic technology in my life. I mean, it's almost thrilling how evil it is, but
I'm really looking forward. Like if it gives a lot of people jobs and stuff, I don't want to see people lose their jobs, but I just want to see like, what's going to bring TikTok down. Like what's the next thing somebody's going to come up with? That's what I'm excited about. I'm excited for the next thing.
Yeah, me too. I mean, yeah, the next TikTok.
Next something that's just going to like bring TikTok down a level.
Jesus. You know what I mean? It's going to be
Facebook
Jesus.
Was there and then Instagram or, you know, Instagram and Vine and stuff and Twitter came and like knocked Facebook down a notch. It was like, nah, we don't need you anymore, Facebook. TikTok came and it's just like Instagram, whatever.
Yeah. I know Erin makes fun of me because I look at Instagram Reels and she'll be like, oh, you're looking at Reels? Oh, please, you're so old. Like, this shit's still new. What are you talking about?
Reels. Came out.
Yeah, what are you? No, it's TikTok. But I went on TikTok and I found myself like looking up after like an hour and a half and just, you know, like this is like some kind of shit in Harry Potter. It's like a curse. Mirror or something. I'm staying away.
It really is. It's the worst, man. It's the worst.
All right, Marcus. Thank you so much. It's very nice catching up with you on here.
And, thank you, man.
I'll see you soon. Hare Krishna. That was Marcus Henderson, everybody. You can find all the links to Marcus at DuncanTrussell.com. Big thank you to our sponsors and God bless you for listening. I love y'all so much. And I will see you next week. With a conversation with Dr. Drew and his daughter Pauline. They just wrote a book together. Until then, Hare Krishna.